Three, two, one, go.
To dream the impossible dream, to write object-oriented code, to kill the unkillable abyss, persist though the progress had slowed, to patch the unpatchable file, to get to release.
Excellent, excellent. Welcome to the Drupal Easy Podcast, episode 163 for October 9th, 2015. I am your host for today, Ryan Price, and I am joining you all from the cold, cold climes of Minnesota. And yeah, as soon as I got off the plane, I was like, it's 50 what? I just came from 80 degree weather where it was just gorgeous in Florida. And joining me, as always, is Mr. Michael Anello.
Yeah, this really is the time to be in Florida, isn't it? This is the best time of year.
Yeah.
The fall. So yeah, so I didn't even realize you were up there, Ryan. So good deal. How long are you up there for?
Just a couple of days. We snuck up here. It was like a big family gathering that always goes on this weekend.
Did it turn into a bit of an engagement party?
Yeah, it will. I mean, a lot of people that are invited to the wedding from up here are going to be coming, so... That's right. Definitely a thing. It's the Columbus Day party, which I guess Columbus Day is now considered not politically correct, but you know, my fiance's family has an Italian background, so they wanted to have their own holiday that, you know, like it's not St. Patrick's Day, it's not one of these other days, so they decided they were going to make a big deal out of it, and it's really awesome. They make lots of good food. We're going to cheat on our diet so bad. It's going to be the best.
Fantastic. You know, we should probably mention the intro music.
Yes, indeed.
Was from the DrupalCon Barcelona pre-note.
Was it Campbell or Adam?
No, that was Adam. Yeah, Adam Duran. Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Well, he's Themer, right? Of a Themer and Coder.
Oh, is he really? I had no idea.
Isn't it?
I don't know.
I'm going to say yes.
Oh, okay. Themer and Coder from the other pre-note.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense.
They usually make an appearance during the pre-note, especially in Europe. But he wasn't wearing his tights?
No. Nope.
Very cool. Well, yeah, so for those of you who have not been paying attention, you know, a couple of big things happened recently, right? DrupalCon Barcelona happened. The videos are online. Please go watch them all. And then, obviously, Drupal 8 Release Candidate 1 is out. Woo-woo!
That's right. Skipping right to the big news.
Hey, well, I don't know. I mean, we got to say something about it right away. In case you haven't heard yet, you want to pause the podcast and go hit Drush Up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, how do you not... I mean, if you're involved in Drupal, how have you not heard about it? That's the question.
Well, it's a good question. You know who has heard about it is Anna Colada. That's our special guest co-host for today.
Hey guys, thanks for having me back.
And Anna, I understand you were in Barcelona as well?
I was. Actually had a great night at Trivia with Mike and Adam. So,
man, Trivia team.
Mike and David and Adam. I think Adam was around, but I meant to say David. Sorry.
Reading the notes and you see names. So, speaking of David, David is our guest for today. He was a keynote speaker at DrupalCon Barcelona. This, I'm going to have to, sorry to say, David, I did not watch your session yet. So, I will be learning all of this for the first time today, but welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, right off the top, how awesome were the community keynotes? I mean, not just because, David, you're one of our guests, and next week we have the other community keynote on the podcast. Uh-huh. But, Anna, let me ask you specifically, were you as jazzed about the fact that, you know, the third day of keynotes was two community keynotes from people from within the community talking specifically about big kind of non-technical community issues?
It was great and a bit unexpected. I know when the session selections were first announced, and people were like, well, okay, so you're taking these two great sessions and you're kind of going to merge them together, and is that giving enough respect to the speakers, and is this really going to be a good idea? It turned out absolutely great, but I know when the sessions were first announced, there was definitely some skepticism of how would this work and things like that.
Yeah, because that was the big issue is you. So David, you actually submitted a proposal for a full length session, and in the end, you only got a half length session, but you got a much bigger audience for your session.
Yeah, I submitted as a presentation for the core conversation, actually.
And, oh, okay.
It was really, really good. I think in general, the idea of having community keynotes is actually a good step towards moving to more community-oriented stuff, I would say. So yeah, it was actually an honor to be there.
So but, from your standpoint, was it a fair trade, though, from your standpoint, that you gave up half of your time, but got to give a keynote in front of a pretty large audience?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you have to summarize a bit and reduce some of the stuff, so that was a bit hard, but then, you know, having the opportunity to present to such a big audience, that's, you know, it's worth it.
Right.
I think it definitely had the intent to start the conversation, and I think there were more people talking about it. That was probably the most tweeted keynote of the week.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Absolutely.
So, and then reaching a larger audience with the discussion, both on community contribution and mental health, I thought was really great.
So, David, give us the rundown of, for people who haven't watched your presentation named Ryan, give us a rundown of what was your presentation about and kind of give us the elevator pitch for it.
So, basically I was presenting the first step of my research. And so the big picture of my research, what I'm interested in, is actually in understanding how the Drupal community organizes itself. And I'm framing this not only through Drupal or through the study of free software communities, but through the idea of the commons and commons-based pre-production. And the idea is that, as some scholars argue, all this is part of something bigger. It's a new mode of production, which is emerging and extending to many different areas. So, for example, we all know things like free software or Wikipedia. But during the first year of the Peer-to-Peer Value project, which is the project I'm collaborating with, one of the research initiatives led by some of my colleagues at the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona, they were actually looking at how this has been spreading to many diverse areas. So, for instance, things like peer-to-peer urbanism or open science or open agriculture, to give you some examples. So there is an ongoing discussion on what can be considered or not commons-based pre-production. But in my case, I'm drawing on the delimitation criteria, which my colleagues developed during this study. And this basically can be summarized, first of all, that it's a collaborative process. I think this is obviously pretty clear in the case of Drupal. it's peer-based, meaning that you can find that there are different levels of structure depending on the process. But it is not mainly based on contractual obligations or coercion. And then another characteristic is a commons process, meaning that it's a process driven by the general interest. So, for example, in the case of the digital commons, this will result in the openness of these resources, such, for instance, in the case of Drupal. And finally, it favors, it's a process that favors reproducibility, for example, in this case of the source code or the documentation, thanks to the licenses, like, for instance, GPL or Creative Commons. But also, for instance, of social practices, thanks to the creation of a culture which is based on openness and freedom. So this is kind of the big picture of my research, and I divided it into three stages. And what I presented in DrupalCon Barcelona were the findings from this first stage, in where I was looking at the notion of contribution in Drupal.
Real quick, before you, let me interrupt just for a second. I think we failed to mention Europe. This is part of your PhD research at the University of Surrey in the UK.
Yeah, that's correct.
No, that's right. And you're actually from Madrid, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
From Madrid. And this is something that you're not yet complete with, but you're well on your way.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm in the middle of it. So this is kind of the first stage, and now I'm looking at some other organizational dynamics.
So let me back up a little bit with what you said earlier. You talked about commons-based peer production.
Yeah.
So just to define what commons are, that's, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's basically any project that is available to everybody in kind of a public sense. Is that a fair definition?
Yeah, that's a fair definition. A really nice definition I like is one from Antonio Lafuente. He's a Spanish sociologist, and he talks about the commons or procomún, and those goods that belong to everyone and no one at the same time.
Okay.
I think this is a very nice definition.
Very good. So you, your research, as you mentioned, is centered around Drupal and the Drupal community.
Yeah.
And various types of contributions.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you learn when during your study about the various types of Drupal contributions?
So yeah, the idea of contribution actually was where I've been putting the focus, because the thing is that when I was doing the literature review, what I found is that most of the studies would typically look either at a very micro level, so for instance, motivations to contribute in a very individual level, or either at a very macro level. So for instance, studies analyzing the whole structure of the Drupal community based on the relationship between individuals and the Drupal project. So in my case, I'm not taking this, let's say, a priori macro or micro approach. So instead, I'm looking at contribution activities as the main of analysis. And my hope is with this will be able to understand better how these communities organize themselves. So yeah, in order to do that, I had to understand first of all, what does to contribute mean in the Drupal community? And since this is a notion which is constantly evolving and is socially constructed. And as a result, I ended up with this really big table of contribution activities in which two main type of contribution activities emerge. The first one is what I call object-oriented ones, meaning that the main focus of action is directed towards some type of object. So for this will be typically a digital commons. So for instance, source code, documentation, translation, etc. And the other category is community-oriented ones, meaning that are those whose main focus of action is directed towards the community. So examples of these, for instance, users and support, or community management, training and mentoring, or the organization and participation in face-to-face events, things like Drupal local events, Drupal camps, Drupal cons, etc. And then I was analyzing how this was represented in, let's say, official level. So for that, I look at Drupal.org and all the platforms around the ecosystem. And what I'm arguing then is that community-oriented ones are less visible, although according to the findings from the interviews with some Drupalistas and also from the documentary analysis, they play a very relevant role in the sustainability of the community. Because, for example, these activities, they help to scale up the sense of community, they foster collaborations in a community such as Drupal, which has been constantly growing. So the outcomes were very different. One of the things I was looking at was at the level of experience. But to give you some examples, for instance, they play a very relevant role for newbies to avoid, for instance, things like imposter syndrome or to increase the will for reciprocity, to give back. And in general, they play a very relevant role to humanize the community and to create this sense of community, which is so important in the Drupal community. And we see reflected even in the main motto, you come for the software, but you stay for the community. So yeah, finally,
go ahead.
Yeah. So yeah, what I'm arguing in this paper, in this first stage, is that this is not only a problem of Drupal, it's a problem that many other common-based peer production communities are facing. And this is not due only to sociocultural reasons, like the idea of co-centrism, which may be a factor, but it's also due to limitations on how can we conceptualize value in commons peer production communities, and how can we incorporate this in the socio-technical system that the communities such as Drupal use to organize themselves. For example, in this case, Drupal.org. So since Drupal is such a large and pioneering community, I think we can, you know, learn a lot from the study of the dynamics in Drupal and to keep on exploring this new consolidation of value. So yeah, that's basically why I've been exploring this first stage at this moment, and I'm looking now at organizational and dynamics, and for that I'm planning to study in depth some of these contribution activities which I identified during the first stage.
Yeah, so you mentioned something a minute ago about the different types of contributions, and this is something that we've talked about in this podcast before, and I know Ryan and I have talked about this a lot as well. Where you broke it up into object-oriented contributions and community-oriented contributions, where the object-oriented contributions were code and documentation, and I'm using air quotes here, but you know, kind of physical contributions or contributions that were direct to the actual, you know, software. Where a community contribution or a community-oriented contribution is event organizing and mentoring and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then you also mentioned, and this is the part that piqued my interest when we first started talking about this in Barcelona, was how are these different types of contributions surfaced on Drupal.org? And I know that we've talked about it on the podcast, and I've had conversations with a lot of different people about how the fact that user profile pages are really quite skewed towards object-oriented contributions. And your research has kind of shown that, you know, obviously object-oriented contributions are important, but community-oriented contributions are just as important and should probably be visible or as visible as object-oriented contributions.
Well, and I think one of the issues is that they're hard to quantify, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Code contributions, you made 5 commits. And then I just was looking at my profile, and it also says, you know, Ryan helped to fix this issue in the last 3 months. So there's now a time-based component to it as well, which is even more reinforcement for the object-based one. But for example, other than the fact that I wrote in my profile that I'm the host of Drupal Easy Podcast, there's not like a really easy way to do that. And podcast is a very, you know, tough one to do because, you know, there's a handful of Drupal podcasts. There's, you know, fewer than a dozen on the world, in the planet. But think about all the people that have made a YouTube video or, you know, written blog posts. I mean, I think this has been addressed in the past before where like people who write blog posts, you know, on their own personal website, it's really hard to have those be surfaced on Drupal.org in any sort of like measurable way. And how do you know which ones are just helpful or which ones are like kind of promoting somebody's work or, you know, there's things like that. But another one that I really like that is there is you get to list all of the Drupal cons that you've attended and people can list you as their mentor. So there is some quantifiable stuff. I actually can think of, a couple of people who I was just thinking, okay, well, I wonder if this person listed me as a mentor, and they did. So that's pretty cool. You know, there is proof.
Remember way back when certifiedtorock.com was a thing.
Yeah.
And it was never made public, like what their formula was, you know, to come up with a number for each person. But one of the things that was definitely part of that formula was the number of times your username was associated with an event on groups.drupal.org as an organizer. So for those of you who have ever organized an event and posted it on groups.drupal.org, there's a multi-valued text field there, I believe it's autocomplete, where you list all the organizers. So granted, it's harder. It's more difficult for currently, it's more difficult for community contributions to be quantified, but it's not impossible. There's data out there. It's just figuring out, and this is something that David and I talked about after your keynote. David. See, I told you I was going to mess it up multiple times.
<That's so. fine. laughs>
I think we talked about it after your keynote. Is you know, wouldn't it be cool if each type of contribution could be given some type of value level and then summed? And I think, David, you were even talking about having that follow the person kind of in a bit chain. Was that correct? Did I have that right?
Yeah, in a blockchain, yeah.
Blockchain,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Blockchain. Yeah. The thing is that...
Like your wallet?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is that, as Ryan was explaining, like, obviously it's more difficult to quantify, but we have some indicators then and there. And the thing is that some of them, they are actually in proprietary platforms. Like, for instance, here in London, for all the local events, they are usually hosted organized through meetup.com. And, you know, that information is there. We have who are the organizers. We have feedback about the event. We have people who attended or not, these kind of things. But these are in proprietary platforms. So what I think we need is actually moving towards kind of decentralized platform in which we incorporate these indicators. But it has to be open as well. It has to be decentralized and it has to be open. The idea of having like a kind of secret algorithm, I don't think that's a good idea neither. And then we can, you know, each community, that was what I think we were discussing in there, that each community has to measure this value in different ways. So maybe what we consider more valuable in Drupal, it might not be in Wikipedia. But this is something that has to be kind of collectively discussed within the Drupal community. But yeah, we have these indicators, and you know, I think we're working on towards that direction. But sometimes we find them in proprietary platforms, or they are not in the centralized platforms. So yeah, so that's an issue.
Well, I mean, you know what? It worries me about, you know, there's a difference between having there be like an open means of calculating some of these things and a closed one, if only that, you know, I don't know of any specific company that does this, but let's just say that your ability to get a Drupal job was dependent on this score for some reason. And so you hire a bunch of people or figure out a way to automate it. Let's say you create a script that then will create a module that essentially copies and pastes code from another module and then makes 1,000 commits where you only change the spacing or something like that. And so now I have this module with 1,000 commits, and then I create 1,000 websites to go and download it overnight. And then the usage statistics for the module go way, way up. Like, you know, if we're going to start treating these signals as something real, what's to prevent anybody? And this is just me asking in a hypothetical. You know, I don't personally believe this, but I feel like in order to have the two-side discussion, we kind of have to ask one of these questions. You know, if we're going to treat these signals as real, should we even try to prevent people from gaming the system? And obviously, the community contribution ones, if they become quantified, there would be ways of gaming that too. So, you know, it's like anytime you measure something, someone can cheat. And is that to be taken into account? Or is it one of those things where you just say, look, you know, in the interest of openness and simplicity and just getting something launched, let's just launch it. And then if it gets gamed, then we fix it.
Yeah, I think what this issue actually reminds me of one of the discussions in when Dries was talking about company profiles, and some people were asking as well, like, you know, what happened if some companies start gaming? I think what we need is peer reviewing, basically. So, you know, if it's the same with, you know, this new system for contribution attached to companies. So some companies could game the system, but it's at some point we detect this. You know, this is an economy of reputation, you think about it. So that would be so bad for the reputation of that company that that company probably would not do it. Or if do it, they would have, you know, like, I don't know the word in English, like ostracism through the, you know, through the community.
Right.
So I guess, I mean, the kind of mechanisms we have to create, they have to be some kind of peer review, peer-to-peer and peer review mechanisms. It's similar to the problem that, you know, we face in Wikipedia, or we face even in science. You think about it, like, you know, how you measure the impact of a paper, right? And it's a similar process as the one in the scientific community in that sense. And yeah, we can develop tools for that, I'm sure.
So two questions. Does the good outweigh the bad in doing something like this, where the good would you know, obviously allow more people to demonstrate that they are active community contributors and raise their profile. Does that advantage outweigh any potential gaming of the system? I think it's a clear yes.
Yeah.
I think we have to try, I guess. Like, obviously, there might be some issues, but I think it's the way to go. And then if there are some issues, I'm sure, you know, we'll find ways to solve them.
Yeah, but there's issues with any time you change something.
Yeah, exactly.
So
my... Just for the sake of involving Anna in the discussion, Anna, you know, do you think that it's worth someone's time as a contributor to then go and do some of these peer reviews? Like, do you think people would get into reviewing, you know, karma points?
Yeah, I was kind of, that's kind of the problem that we have, because looking at the commit credit counter, like that's a verifiable external metric. Right now, all we have for community-oriented stuff on Dirado is self-reporting that, oh, I went to this event, I do this thing, I do that thing. And yeah, you can dig into it a little bit and see, okay, is this person really doing this thing? Or are they like the self-appointed leader of a meetup group that nobody goes to? But that's a bit less easily quantified, I think. I think it's good to have, and it would be great to try and expose that data, but it's still more qualitative than like quantitative at that point, I think.
Good. Okay, Mike, you were going to say something.
Yeah, as soon as I find my mute button, I'll start talking. So, yeah, my other question was, and this might be more for David, because he's done some research, and I think I asked you this already, and I think I already know what the answer is, but have you looked at other open source communities to see if anybody else handles community-oriented contributions in an interesting way, you know, something akin to what we're talking about?
So I have not done kind of a comparative study yet, although this is it would be a very interesting one.
Yeah.
A case that I was discussing, actually I met some researchers of a research center in Barcelona while I was there, and they were explaining me about this kind of issues, for instance, in Wikipedia as well. So I think this is something that all the communities are trying to work on. But I think Drupal, I mean, because the community is so large and, you know, the sense of community is so big and there are so many events, I think we're kind of pioneers on this. But to be sincere, I don't have, like, proper data on this. So.
Okay, fair enough.
It would be good to explore, actually. Future work.
So what's your... What's your timeline for completing this research?
So I got I'm collaborating with this project from the EU, and this has been 3 years, and this is my last year. I finished in October, so that's when I ran out of funding. So I'm hoping to finish a draft then, and deliver the draft, and then my idea is just come back to Madrid and, you know, finish refining the thesis during 4 or 5 months more. But the next stage and the next one I'm collecting data, I started already just after coming back from Barcelona. So yeah, 1 year and probably 1.5 years.
Okay, very good. I do want to mention that video of the keynote as well as your slides, we'll have links to both in the show notes. So if anybody's more interested, and we'll have your Twitter handle and stuff in the show notes, and we'll mention it in a little while as well. So Anna or Ryan, any more questions for David before we move on?
I have a tech question for David.
Yeah,
David, you're rubbing it in my face now.
About the patterns module, it seems like you've contributed quite a bit to that.
Oh, yeah. That was actually that's actually how I ended up in the UK. So thanks to the patterns module. So I was working in a. I used to work in a Drupal company, small company in Madrid, and then I went to a conference from who is now my supervisor, and they were talking. I didn't know they were working with Drupal or anything, but there was a research project called Qlectips, in which the idea was trying to measure quality in a distributed way in scientific community, so related to these kind of things. And it happens that they were working with Drupal because they were building, they were trying to build a distribution to, you know, the typical websites from like a typical small website from a department or from a research project or something like that. So the idea that's like, for instance, imagine that you upload your papers in your website of your research center, and then instead of having these metrics on, you know, the impact factor from kind of big companies, then we have this distributed. So I started working with this through the patents module, because the idea was that the idea was like, we'll, you know, it's similar to the configuration management initiative in Drupal 8, but not so cool, basically. So the idea was like, we could extract the configuration from the websites and put it into YAML or XML files, and then we could share the configuration between different websites. The other big part of the distribution was a module called Drupal to Drupal, which basically the idea was is to connect Drupal websites in a kind of peer-to-peer way. So you can, you know, create a connection, an encrypted connection between different Drupal websites, sending a public key, and then you can give like remote permissions to execute from another site. So the idea was to create a kind of a network, a peer-to-peer network of Drupal sites, and then I was involved in patents, in developing the module patents for Drupal 7. Yeah.
Cool. So the upshot being that there are ways to push around configuration in Drupal 7 with YAML files and not necessarily going through features. It's a little bit more meta programming than that. Is that pretty much the same?
Yeah, that's the idea was something similar to what is now the configuration management initiative in Drupal 8, but it was not working that well. Like we find a lot of dependencies and things like that. So what we did basically is like to provide, so we created a way to, so a hook, so you could create your own patterns with your contributed modules. But we created, like we made, let's say, like patents ready or patents compatible for some of the core modules. But we needed as well, you know, the contributed modules. And as far as I know, it was only my other contributed module, the one who implemented it. So yeah, but the idea was to be able to make features that could be changeable, but only based on the configuration. So So I'm still maintaining it on Drupal 7, but I saw no point in importing it to Drupal 8 because now the configuration management initiative is much better.
Yeah. Right. Very cool. That was all I had.
Switching back to the community discussion that we're having, I guess it's just this is a conversation that I would like to start. It's not necessarily we're going to have any answers anytime soon, I'm sure. But we finally have Drupal.org updated enough so that in addition to personal people getting credit for their object-focused contributions, their companies and their clients are getting credit for these activities, giving companies a little bit more of an incentive to support the code creation activities. I'm just hoping that there can kind of become a way that companies can see the value of community-based contributions as well. I can think of maybe one or two people that are employed to work on this for the Drupal community, but that's, you know, there are many more people who are paid to contribute to core than to contribute to the community. So I'd be interested in kind of tacking that on as an addendum of, you know, how can we surface and measure these contributions?
Yeah, I think what David, oh my goodness, mentioned earlier, Dries mentioned it in one of his presentations, I forget exactly which one, but the Drupal.org marketplace page, which showcases Drupal organizations, I think up until DrupalCon Barcelona, companies were listed alphabetically. Sometime around Barcelona, it was switched so that they were ordered by the number of contributions in the last, it might be 30 or 90 days. So let me see if I can. I think it's just drupal.org/marketplace. Let me just check real quick. Marketplace. I think this is the type of thing you're talking about, Anna, correct?
Yeah. Like as an aggregate, that's the aggregate result of individual contributors being able to say that my work on this specific commit was funded by this specific company.
Right. Yeah. So what you were talking about a second ago is more of not so much reporting from the individual level and then it being aggregated for the organization, but more for the organization saying, this is what we did.
I guess my main, what's the word I'm looking for?
Idea? Point?
Sure. I'm trying to think of something a bit more insidious than point. But my purpose for going down the road of that is to try and get more companies that to support their employees to contribute not only to the code, but to the community and community management and things like that.
Okay, yeah. Well, so that kind of ties the whole thing together with how do we quantify community contributions so that companies can claim their, or not just claim, but support their employees in allowing them to do this.
And let's say that some company is, you know, company XYZ is number one in object contributions, but company ABC could be number one in community contributions. You know what I mean? You could specialize in it, which I actually think that certain companies are specializing in it. It just, we don't have a signal. So I think that's really important. I mean, even just the fact that Black Mesh, who doesn't really employ any core developers, hired, you know, Kathy, that's huge for them, right? They mm-hmm. should get a lot of kudos just for that fact by itself. Because Kathy is probably one of the people who has the most community points, you know, not the only person, but she's a good example, right? And then there's two other things I think about. One is, as you say, like, you know, if we can track those community contributions, what if we also made the communities like regional or subject-based into entities also that you could somehow grant credit to? So like, you know, Florida Drupal Camp's code sprint had, you know, 85 karma points because they were well attended and a lot of people stuck around for the code sprint and they got a lot of issues closed that week. You know what I mean? Like, could the camp itself earn karma?
It's a different type of organization.
Right.
It's, you know, you either are a for-profit organization or you're an ad hoc, you know, just community organization.
And obviously Bad Camp and Nice Camp would get the most, or so it would seem, just based on the number of people that attend. But if you take out the top 5% and the bottom 5%, like, what do you have left? And that'd be where I would want to see there be interesting trends. And the other one, you know, in the similar vein, like, could we have geotagging of commits, being that, you know, a lot of commits are probably coming out of the big population centers and the big tech centers like Austin and, you know, New York and San Francisco, but then all of a sudden just like a whole bunch of commits pop up in the middle of Idaho, and then you want to go like, well, what's going on in Idaho? You know, and then you go, oh, look, it's DrupalCorn. Or is
Chris.
It?
Is that Chris Shattuck?
Yeah, well,
Chris Shattuck. DrupalCorn's Iowa, not Idaho.
Iowa. It starts with an I, and it's in
maybe
the
plains. Maybe it's Drupal Potato.
Drupal Potato. Yeah,
I think we might have a show title.
You know, keeping this conversation, an idea that just come to my mind. But let's imagine that we will have a Drupal distribution, which we could have for, you know, the different. Let's start for Drupal camps, for instance, for the events, and then we create a network, you know, a kind of a federated network of through the Drupal websites, and then we start having this in a federated way. And we are collecting these statistics that otherwise are ending up, you know, in things like nowadays, for instance, in local meetups in proprietary platforms. So that would be a way as well.
Well, as you say, that concept from Bitcoin, and I'm sure other areas have this too, but of the blockchain that, you know, when a commit goes out, it's not just stored in my database. It gets propagated, you know, via, you know, this distributed network to other databases, so that a lot of people, when they want to look up this information, they don't necessarily have to come to fldrupalcamp.org to find it. That it could be, you know, you could, it might be on drupal.org, or it might be on, you know, communitycontributions.org or whatever it happens to be. And when a Drupal project then spawns a totally new system, like I know there have been some jQuery plugins that came out of Drupal, like jQuery once. You know, we see that command all over Drupal. I want to only run this thing once, and then I want to apply a CSS class to it. As far as I understand, that was a Drupal piece of code that made it out into the wide world of jQuery, if I'm not completely wrong. So those kinds of things that getting spun out into other projects, those could be sources of karma as well.
Yeah, I think David mentioned earlier that, you know, we really have the opportunity to be, as a community, to be the pioneers in this, you know, in this whole, how do we quantify various types of contributions?
That's correct. I mean, something that in this research project we're actually working on a software for this, but the idea is that it has to be very generic, because most of the GoMS pre-production communities, they might not be, you know, technical at all. But the good thing about the, you know, free software communities is that actually we create our own tools. So yeah, definitely we have a chance to, you know, explore this, definitely, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Mike, I believe it's time for some Drupal Easy News. It looks like you are getting ready to teach your next session of the Drupal Career Online program.
Well, actually, what we just decided on the dates for the next session. We're actually in the middle of, I really need to count. I think it's either our 9th or our 10th session right now. We're right at about at the halfway mark of our 12-week class. And we just set the dates for the next class, which is going to start after the new year, March 7th, 2016, to be exact. I'm spotting a typo there. So if you're interested in a 12-week Drupal course that teaches you not only Drupal best practices and information architecture, but now the curriculum covers both Drupal 7 and Drupal 8, as well as common Drupal development workflows. So working with a local environment and a dev and a stage and a production environment, and how do you move code and configuration between those environments. It's really a really cool class to learn how to become a professional Drupal developer. If you've got no Drupal background, or just maybe a generic web development background, or even you're a Drupal hobbyist who knows that you have bad habits, this is the type of course that you're looking for, because we teach you the right way to do things, the right way to think about how to build a Drupal site, and the right way to work with other people, work with version control, work with features module. If you're interested, by all means, go to drupaleasy.com/DCO. And there's plenty of information there. And, you know, hopefully we'll see you in March.
Awesome. Well, Mike, you're going to have to read the first story, because my Google Docs crashed.
That's weird.
So did mine.
Yeah, my Google Doc says everything's offline. So.
Oh, maybe Google is having fun today.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, because our connection seems pretty solid anyway. But so yeah, so let's talk about our three stories, and I wanted just to go around the horn here and talk about what our favorite parts of Barcelona were, about DrupalCon Barcelona. And Ryan, I'm actually going to start with you, because I know that you've been watching. You weren't there. But yes. You've been watching some of the presentations. So for the ones that you've watched, what have you found really interesting?
Well, one of them I was going to make my pick of the week, but now you're killing that.
Well, you can do it. You can kill two birds with one stone. That's fine.
Okay. I think, you know, the one that it was hard to watch at times, and he acknowledged it, and he said, it took me a long time to understand these, was Larry Garfield did a session called Drupal in 2020. And it was replete with nerdy references, which was very, you know, good to start. But he basically looked at what are the things that are really on the cutting edge of PHP and web development in general right now, beyond, you know, like web services. Okay, great. Web services is actually considered a baseline. It's not considered innovative at this point. You know, there are very few things that went into Drupal 8 that were really, really breakthrough things as far as web development is concerned. And he also did a really neat breakdown that said, if you ran PHP as a persistent process with multi-threading, it would actually compare with Node.js, for example, which everybody loses their minds over because it's so performant and it's non-blocking I/O. But if you actually wrote your PHP code that way, you could get the same kind of performance out of PHP. Which it was not, I don't think he was trying to give a philosophy and say, we should do this. But he said, even if we try to get close to that, Drupal overall will still be a better tool to test, to write code in, to run quickly, to run on multi-core processors, to be able to serve up different kinds of applications, because it will be agnostic of serving web pages and, you know, running in a CGI script. That was a really big one for me because it was so forward thinking. Like it hardly mentioned at all what we've got today or what we just finished with Drupal 8 RC1 coming out, which is a huge accomplishment. But that, like, that almost felt like, you know, we used to get more technical stuff out of Dries's keynotes, and I feel like lately it's been a little bit more philosophical, which is okay. But, you know, like someone, and I'm going to say several someones, are kind of like inserting themselves as the technical leadership of the community, because Dries has, I think, taken a step back as far as some of that stuff goes, towards more of like the, you know, user experience, developer experience, Drupal as a product kind of a stuff, versus some of like the hard technical things that will make Drupal overall better and more widely adopted by certain kinds of people. So I talked about that for plenty of long time, so we should go to somebody else.
It's like you ran out of things to say, which I find hard to believe.
No, I have more, but I talked for a long time. Let's have somebody else.
Okay, Anna, how about you? Favorite thing from Barcelona?
I have two answers. I have the official answer and the unofficial answer. Hmm. Official answer would be trivia. my team and I won trivia, sitting at the table next to Mike. So I say I got some good vibes from Mike there.
That was a really cool trivia venue as well, wasn't it?
It was great. The venue was great. The questions were great. This is my first time attending trivia. The last DrupalCon that I had attended, which was Chicago in 2011, did not have trivia, or if it did, I wasn't going to social events anyway at that time. So that was a great experience. We had three new people, three new DrupalCon attendees on the team, and we won. So that was really exciting. Unofficially, it would be after the mentors thank you dinner, a group of us went down to the beach and went swimming at midnight under the nearly full moon. And that was really a whole lot of fun, too.
Outstanding. And David?
So, yeah, for me, I think, for instance, all the sessions, for instance, a session about conflict resolutions or the sessions about tools for improving communication by Donna Benjamin this year were great. I think they are important to increase the awareness about the diversity and relevance of, let's say, community-oriented activities. So I think, yeah, having these sessions in Barcelona related to community training are very, very positive, and I really, really enjoyed them.
So I think I had two. I guess one of them is a favorite. One of them just a takeaway that I really noticed this year this is my second European DrupalCon. I think, Ryan, you went to the Paris one a few years ago with me,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Paris.
Yeah, a bunch of us were there. The European DrupalCon has a much different feel, I think, than the North American one. And I don't, Anna, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but it feels like people who attend the European DrupalCons tend to be more in the professional Drupal developer category, where in the U.S., there's definitely obviously a big contingent of professional Drupal developers, but there's also a contingent of, you know, maybe hobbyists or people new to Drupal, and also a very big contingent of businesses interested in using Drupal. In Barcelona, for me, it just felt like we didn't have too many of the hobbyists or too many of the businesses. It seemed like the vast majority of the people there were professional Drupal developers. Did you get that sense, or was it just me?
It's been a while since I've been to a U.S. con. I think the expectation and the perception that the cons in the U.S. are much more commercial-focused, much more business-focused, is definitely there, at least the expectation of it. I'm not too sure about hobbyists. Hopefully, I'm still going to New Orleans and we'll be able to give you a better reading then.
All right, fair enough. And then the other takeaway I have from Barcelona is the venue. The venue was okay. It was, you know, it was sufficient.
Just don't talk about the food.
Oh, no, I'll just talk about the location, because it was literally a block from the beach, which was fantastic, because either in the morning, I'm kind of an early riser. I like to go for runs and stuff. So in the morning, you could get up and you go walking on this big, wide promenade along the beach for a few kilometers. And I went down there a few mornings to go running, and I saw all kinds of other Drupalistas, you know, either walking or running or heading out for breakfast. And then after the conference, you know, in the evening, you walk a block and you're back on the beach, and they literally have restaurants on the beach. And I'm not talking about like some sand and then a little berm and then some concrete and a restaurant. I'm talking about where the restaurant is literally built on the sand. I think we actually had dinner there one night, a bunch of us, Anna and I and probably, you know, half a dozen other people. But it was just really, really nice, because anytime, you know, in the late afternoon when I was finished with what I had to do, I would generally walk that direction and just find some place for some tapas or something before I had to go on to do the next thing. So kudos on the location. And easy to go swimming at midnight, apparently, as well.
Yeah, you didn't even need your clothes.
Fantastic.
All right. So I do have one more quick pick.
Go.
So this one, the title of the session was called Solving Drupal Performance and Scalability Issues. It was actually by a co-worker from my European counterpart, FFW, which, you know, was formerly ProPeople, Tyne Sorensen. I'm guessing that's Swedish. And she just went through some things that was like beyond the obvious, like using varnish and stuff like that. Like, this was actually one of the first times I've ever seen someone describe how they use New Relic and why they think it's a good idea. Like, I've heard it thrown around a thousand times, but I don't think I've ever had someone just go like, this is what I use it for, and this was how it solved a problem for me. And one really interesting one, which was that, I don't know if this is purely anecdotal or not, but by switching from Vue's contextual filters to regular filters, she ended up speeding up this one page considerably, because it used a different kind of a join, an inner join versus an outer join, which I would want to actually look at that specific query and find out. But, you know, if it worked, then it worked. And just the simple fact of sometimes just turn on caching inside of views or inside of panels or whatever it happens to be. Totally worth watching, and I will include a link to that video as well.
So that sounds like a very, like, practical session. Like, here's a problem. Here's how we solved it. Here's another problem. Here's how we solved it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. Yeah. And then at the end, a bunch of people were like, "Oh, have you ever used HHVM?" And she said, "Nope. I don't really know what you're talking about." So that's your homework, you know? And then like on my, cause I put together a playlist of all of the, you know, videos from Barcelona that I want to watch. So like, you know, four videos down from there is someone, and their title of their session is "Headless Drupal 8 in HHVM plus AngularJS." It's like, could we throw more buzzwords in there?
Outstanding. All right, so move on to the next story.
Let's do it.
Okay, we already mentioned it. Drupal 8.0.0 release candidate 1 was released on Wednesday, Ooh. 2 days ago.
On Wednesday, while I was in a meeting with a client kicking off their new Drupal 8 project.
Wow, that's, you know, that's good timing right there.
Well, you know, when you can plan ahead and be close enough to the development that it's like, okay, no, we should start now.
Yeah, so Dries tipped everybody off to this during his Dries note in Barcelona, where he announced that barring any critical bugs that involve data loss or anything else awful, we will see the first release candidate on October 7th, and that is exactly what happened. I believe that since in the past 2 days, we're recording this on Friday the 9th, we've bounced back and forth between 0 and 1 critical issues. I believe we're at 1 critical issue right now. Yes, we are. But it's definitely a great big step for the Drupal community to get to this point. Right now, development is pretty much just focused on banging away at Drupal 8 core, trying to get as many people using it as possible to ferret out any other showstoppers that might be considered critical bugs. While at the same time, triaging? Am I saying that right?
Triage.
That's it.
Thank you. Okay, close enough. Triaging. Why? I can't say that word. Going through all the major issues classified as major and deciding which ones we really need to fix before our release or which ones we can wait a little bit longer. Really exciting stuff. Looking back at history, the time it took for Drupal 7 to go from its first release candidate to release. Anybody know approximately how much time that was?
Something like 5 years.
No. Between.
Not from
sorry,
RC.
What? I'm not paying attention. Don't ask me questions.
Are you petting your dog?
I'm still trying to reload Google Docs.
Okay, let it go. Yeah, between RC1 of Drupal 7 and the official release of Drupal 7. Want to take a guess?
This is a good question for a trivia night.
Yeah, Anna, very close. It actually was about 2 months. So potentially we can say, and granted Drupal 6 to 7 wasn't quite as big of a leap as 7 to 8, but theoretically we could potentially see a Drupal 8 release sometime around the new year. And I think the time frame is similar with Drupal 7, because I think Drupal 7 was released
January 7th, 2011.
Right after the new year. So we're kind of hopefully maybe on the same track.
I would like to see it before the new year. If everything goes smoothly, we could probably get it out before the end of November, before Thanksgiving in the U.S.
Yeah,
that would be perfect, but if not by then likely the new year.
But, you know, as we were just saying, it's okay now to start recommending Drupal 8 for some clients. Because you can, you know, you can upgrade Drupal 8 between release candidates without fear of loss of data. And it's, you know, for the right clients with the right type of site, you know, it's ready. It's ready to go. There's definitely going to be some edge cases or some more complex sites that, you know, still need additional contributed modules made available, or ported, I should say, rather than made available. But for certain types of clients with certain types of sites, absolutely Drupal 8 is ready to go at this point. All right, should we move on to the next story?
Go for it. I think you're the only one with the list.
I can make up whatever I want. Fantastic. So keeping along the same Drupal 8 path here is Angie posted on the Acquia blog announcing the Drupal 8 Contrib Porting Tracker project on Drupal.org. And this is a really cool little project. If you go to drupal.org/project/contrib_tracker, it's basically a way for contributed modules to self-report what their Drupal 8 status is. And then the Drupal 8 Contrib Porting Tracker project can pull in all of that data and provide a very easy to use list of modules and their current status for Drupal 8. Angie compared it to what a lot of companies are probably doing these days, you know, self-maintaining a spreadsheet showing all of the contributed modules that their site has and what the status of all those contributed modules is in their migration from 7, their port, I should say, from 7 to 8. Really, really cool. Right now there are 90 issues. I'm using air quotes for issues because I'm talking about 90 modules listed on it. So there's modules like, let's pick one, like taxonomy menu module. That port is already done. They have a Drupal 8 release. There are the services module. And one I was looking at earlier is the entity PDF module, which looks really interesting. It's a module that just with a specific path will print any entity out to a PDF. So it's kind of the new version of the print module that gave you that PDF generation capability. So if you have a Drupal 7 site or even a Drupal 6 site that you're going to be migrating up to Drupal 8 and you're wondering if the modules that you need are ready, this Drupal Contrib tracker is an absolutely great place to start. And I will link to, in the show notes, a blog post that's kind of all about it, its genesis, how Contrib module maintainers can contribute to it, and how Drupal site builders or site maintainers can leverage the information in there. So has anybody checked it out yet? Or is it just me?
I have looked at it. Okay. None of my modules are really candidates for this right now, as the only sites that really use the modules I maintain are sites that I built. But I have put them up as open source, so hooray me. And actually, I don't work on them anymore because I started my job. But looks cool. I know I'm going to be using this tool, so that's a bonus. Yeah.
Well, and the Kanban is awesome.
Yeah, there's actually, from the project page, you can get to someone is sucking the data from the from the issue queue for that project into a Kanban board as well, which is pretty slick.
And for people who don't speak Japanese, that basically means this is currently, you know, like in progress, finished, you know, needs review, has bugs, whatever it happens to be. This just puts everything into different buckets so you can see, you know, which things kind of need some help or which things are completely finished.
In a slightly prettier interface than Drupal.org issues.
Yeah.
So is the Google Doc still down? Should I just keep going?
Press on, sir.
I will press on. So Ryan, by the way, I was actually, I don't know if your ears were burning earlier today, but I was having a conversation about you with one of your coworkers earlier today.
Oh?
Yes. All good things, though. I was trying to figure out, like, is... How's Ryan working out? Everything going okay? You know, is he banging stuff out for you? You're like, oh yeah, well, I don't hear too much, but normally I would only hear stuff if stuff's really bad or really amazing. So he's somewhere in between. So there you go. There's your pat on the back. All right, hey, let's talk about another Drupal organization, WebEnabled and DevPanel.com. Longtime sponsors of the podcast. This is where you need to go if you are interested in getting your Git repository hosted and getting a development environment set up where you can invite other team members to clone and push to that repository and to utilize that dev site. I'm actually using WebEnabled as part of the Drupal Career Online program as far as when we're talking about modern workflows. We cover GitHub is a very basic way of pushing and pulling from a repository, and then web-enabled, which is kind of a very hands-on way of doing things where you're pushing and pulling, and there's not a whole lot of automation there, and then kind of the modern Drupal hosting with Acquia and Pantheon and Platform, where you get a little bit more automation and a little bit slicker of UI. Webenable.com is fantastic for setting up a site quickly, getting into a Git repository, and getting your team members on board and working on a project in a shared development environment. They are also the makers of devpanel.com, which is the tagline for devpanel.com is cPanel for developers. So it's a way of not only managing a single server, but managing multiple servers in your environments. So thank you to WebEnabled and devpanel.com, as always. Okay, picks of the week. David, let's start with you, and we'll use this as a teaser for the next podcast as well.
Okay, so actually, yeah, my suggestion to everyone would be to Mike Bell's blog. So I encourage everyone to visit and follow Mike's blog. The URL, I think, is mikebell.io. And yeah, I first saw Mike Bell's presentation on open source and mental health during DrupalCon London in March of this year, if I recall properly. And I was really impressed, so I started reading his blog afterwards. And then this year I have the opportunity to present together with him in DrupalCon, so which was such a great honor. So yeah, I think this is a great example of the kind of initiative which are key to humanize the community, as we were saying. So I would recommend you to follow his blog, and of course, if you haven't seen the presentation, do it as well.
Yeah, his blog is pretty amazing. I read the past 2 or 3 years of his blog posts in the run-up to DrupalCon Barcelona, and it was it's not always an easy read because he's very raw and very honest with the issues that he's had to overcome with mental health. So, but it's totally inspiring, and if you read that and then watch his presentation and then listen to our next podcast as well, hope you'll get a full picture about who he is and why the topic he's talking about is so important to our community. Ryan, did you have another pick of the week? Because I know we moved your Drupal in 2020 pick of the week.
Good question.
You can pass if you'd like.
Well, as soon as Delicious loads, I will tell you one.
All right, well, one
really
that,
good one I read, and okay, we didn't mention this. There was a blog post that was on the weekly drop earlier this week. It was titled, "What is Big Pipe and What Does It Mean for the Future of Drupal Performance?" And I'm clicking on it now because I don't remember who wrote it. But this guy, Monarch Digital, he recaps something that Dries was talking about. Okay, it doesn't say whose blog this is anywhere. But it talks about how now in Drupal 8, just by using the caching tags on your blocks and your other sort of renderable elements on the page, you can sort of specify, this is the thing that's really easy to cache, so always cache it for everyone, no matter whether they're signed in or not. And just as soon as they ask for it, it sends them that, the sort of like the HTML page template and the main content of the page, but then the other parts of the page that are really super customizable. It actually uses a technology that was invented by Facebook that they call Big Pipe to push out the customized blocks and the blocks that are harder to cache. And there's a video. Was this in the keynote? I think it was.
Yes, this was part of Dries' keynote.
It goes into the fact that we can load the, most of the page in like 200, 300 milliseconds. And then the rest of the page could take 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds. But it doesn't matter because as long as the browser responds, you feel like you're getting a product. So there's, a little bit of psychology there that even though the loading icon spins for 5 seconds, the as long as the page renders something, you feel like it's working. And it's not Ajax, it's not, you know, AngularJS, it's not anything like that. It's just the way that the page gets assembled. I mean, I don't know the technical. There might be some JavaScript involved, but it's just the way that it works. And I guess a lot of the browsers had to implement some new API in order to get this to work. But it's been out long enough that all the major browsers have it now.
Yeah, I notice that if you visit Facebook on the web, and you go to like your main homepage on Facebook with the news feed, not the instant, but very shortly after you load that homepage, each of the articles kind of has like gray placeholder boxes that are all kind of the same shape. That's kind of big pipe in action because that page loads very quickly with all these placeholders. And then as each news item comes in, it replaces the placeholder with the news item. But it feels like everything's loading very quickly. Rather than having to wait for everything to show up, it can, you know, progressively render it as it gets things.
Yeah.
So Dries' presentation on this was actually pretty good. It was very understandable for, you know, someone like me to understand. So that went a long way.
Awesome.
Anna, pick of the week?
Yeah, I've got lots of things I could talk about, but no like links or something to point to or discussion or something that is what normally is a pick of the week. So I'm going to pass.
You sure? You can just talk about something if you want. We can call that a pick of the week. There's no rules when it comes to picks of the week.
Okay, it's pick of the week. Removing theme functions in core. We're down to two. Theme underscore functions in core. You're getting rid of them. If you have a contrib module, get rid of them, because by Drupal 9, they're going to be gone.
So is that...
That's my pick of the week.
Is the plan to get rid of them from 8.0, or is this an 8.1, 8.2, or whenever we can thing?
From the ability to do them will still be in 8.0, as far as I know. We're just we're down to two in core that we are converting into Twig templates. At this point, contrib can still use theme functions, but the preference is going to be towards templates instead.
So they're going to be tolerated in Drupal 8 and outlawed in Drupal 9 is the hope.
Possibly outlawed sooner than that, but yes, for 8.0, at least tolerated.
All right, so I'm going to put for your pick of the week, I'm going to say no more theme functions, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
Sure, and I can even get you the meta that points to that, but we're down to two.
All right, fantastic. All right, so my pick of the week is a blog post. It wasn't meaty enough, I didn't think, to make it one of the top three stories, but it had one question that I really, really liked. It made me think about it. It was an interview with a guy by the name of Colin Schwartz, who's a Drupal developer, and it's actually back from DrupalCon Los Angeles, but it was just recently posted on opensource.com just a week ago, actually. And it was an interview. He's a Drupal developer, open source guy. And one of the questions really just kind of made me think and made me smile. And the question was, if Drupal were a musician or a band, which would it be? So I did not put the answer into the rundown, which apparently nobody can, or his answer.
Well, I cheated, so you... Oh, actually, no, it is.
I saw that blog post.
Yes, it is in the rundown. Well, so Colin suggested Rush, the band Rush. And he writes, one of those niche cult bands that outsiders just don't understand. I think that's also true for Drupal. Let's go with Rush. I think their music's not too bad, but I just don't get the hype. Friends of mine that like them just can't get enough of those guys. So, you know, if you replace the word band and, you know, with CMS or the word, you know, music with Drupal, it's actually not that bad of a description of Drupal. You know, people who get it and really love it, everybody else kind of looks at it and says, yeah, it's okay. I just don't understand why everybody loves it.
How about the television show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? I know people who are big fans. I've tried to watch it, and I just can't get into it.
See, I'm a big fan, and that show, I don't know if I'd want to compare that to anything, because that show just feels so dirty to me. Everything about that show is just, like, scuzzy. But I love watching it. It's hysterical. But I wouldn't. I don't think I'd look at Drupal and say, "Oh, everything about Drupal scuzzy." I actually think most of Drupal is very elegant.
So you're saying there are reasons not to like the show. See, but I okay, but let's take the opposite angle, right?
Yes.
Pre Drupal 8, there were lots of things about Drupal that lots of, you know, quote unquote hardcore programmers thought were very scuzzy, right?
Sure.
Procedural code and magic function names and, you know. Mm-hmm. PHP 4, you know, design methodology and, you know, so many things, right? The even just the configuration management aspect of it, the fact that, like, the way that we do, you know, what other people call migrations is, well, you just move the database around. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you either have to move the whole database or nothing.
Right.
So we did have a lot of things that people considered kind of nasty, right?
Yeah, that's true. But when I started using Drupal, the thing that really drew me to Drupal was the elegance of its contributed modules. Because I had worked with CMSs before where if you wanted to add a contributed module, it involved patch files.
Yeah.
We had to go and patch parts of the core part of the software.
Well, and I think there are still projects out there where you are kind of running a forked version, you know, and then when an update comes out, then you kind of have to do this like thing, you know. I guess object-oriented makes it a little bit easier, but pre, you know, like the wave of object-oriented, particularly in the PHP world, it wasn't that easy to override things without patching them.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this question. I saw it a few days ago. And I kept on thinking about it. And the only other band I could think of that I could compare to Drupal, and it came from because I started thinking about, well, what bands came out around the same time that Drupal came out? So I started kind of with a similar age range. And one of the bands I found that as soon as I saw it, I said, oh, that's a pretty good example, is Coldplay. Coldplay came out around the same time. And as far as I'm concerned, you either love Coldplay or you hate Coldplay. And I feel that, you know, a lot of people feel the same way about Drupal.
It's an interesting one.
There you go. All right. Well, food for thought.
Yes.
So let's finish up strong here. So upcoming events. Drupal Camp Atlanta is next weekend, October 16th and 17th. I think it's the same place it was last year, so just north of Atlanta, Georgia. And then a few weeks after that will be Drupal Camp Chattanooga, which is Chattanooga, Tennessee. That's on November 7th, and I actually will be attending Drupal Camp Chattanooga. I actually lucked out because my son, who's on a crew team, actually has a regatta in Chattanooga that same weekend. So I'm going to bounce around between the Riverside and Drupal Camp Chattanooga. And go ahead.
Missing from your list is Bad Camp.
Yes.
Bay Area Drupal Camp.
Whatever.
That little one. And I think Pacific Northwest Drupal Summit is going on now as we speak.
Well, and to that note, the New England Drupal Camp is going on this weekend.
What weekend is Bad Camp? Is that... Isn't that traditionally
the 22nd through the 25th? It's shifted to before Halloween this year. Right. Usually it was after.
Yeah, usually it's the weekend after Halloween, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Okay, so that's about 2 weeks away. All right, very good. And then it's time to start talking about and planning Drupal 8 launch parties. So the Drupal Association has an article about it. They want to collect a list of launch parties. So if you participate in community-oriented contributions, now's the time to announce that you're going to be holding a Drupal 8 launch party. We're going to actually have a fairly big one in Orlando. We normally run a bit of a surplus with our camps, so we've got some leftover funds from our last camp that we're going to put to good use in having a pretty killer launch party in Orlando. We don't know the date yet. I suspect it's going to be sometime towards the end of the year, whenever Drupal 8 is close or launched. So look for a launch party in your area as well.
Well, then I might actually end up having to attend a launch party in Portland.
Yeah, that's what we're...
Having to. Oh, darn.
Having to. I might be living there by then is what I'm getting at. Well, I will be living there, but I just don't know when Drupal 8's coming out, so it's hard to say whether it's before I move or after.
Do you have a schedule? Do you know when you're moving?
Basically, when everybody else is taking a holiday break would be the easiest time, and it works out with our schedules, too.
All right. Very good. So, Ryan, where can everybody find you online?
You can find me at RyanPriceMedia.com. I don't post there often, but I have links to all of my other sites there. I do host this other podcast called Bringing Art and Technology Together, which I have a bunch of episodes from Orlando Maker Faire that I haven't posted yet because I'm very, very busy with other things lately, which I can attest that the last Drupal Easy podcast, I think, took almost 2 weeks to come out. Apologize for that one. But I think it did come out before DrupalCon actually was over, so maybe you got to listen to it in the airplane on the way home, which was a fantastic episode. Well, I don't know. I'm a big fan of our show, so what can I say? But yeah, it just, you know, the community is always amazing me all the time. Sometimes you have to take a look back and go, man, how did we get to 163? And
yeah, no kidding, huh?
Yeah.
And on Twitter, you didn't mention your Twitter.
Oh, I go by Liberator, take out the last vowel. And that's pretty much my username everywhere. So check me out.
All right, very good. And Anna, where can people find you?
In Chicago. Online, also AnnaColada.com and aColada pretty much everywhere else.
Are you guys doing a launch party, do you know?
There's some history with launch parties in Chicago. The last one... introduced a significant schism in the local community.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm not sure. Yeah, I'll let you know.
That could be an entire future podcast episode right there.
It really could, yeah.
Because unfortunately, we hear about, you know, schisms in different communities here and there, but never, you know, it's always like third party, oh, I heard this, I heard that. So let's hope it was short-lived. And David, well, let's just say it was. Let's stay. We'll be optimists here, or either that, or we'll just stick our head in the sand and pretend everything's fine.
Sounds good.
Okay, David, where can people find you online?
So my nickname is D Rothas in, you know, Drupal, Twitter, GitHub, everywhere, and then also davidrothas.com. And in London, if you come here. Let me know. We can drink a beer or something.
and that's spelled D-R-O-Z-A-S.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, correct. All right, very good. And I am Ultimike pretty much everywhere. And you can, as always, you can follow Drupal Easy at Drupal Easy on Twitter and DrupalEasy.com. Our two missing co-hosts today, Andrew M. Riley on Twitter. He hasn't been around in a while, and it's crazy because we changed the recording date. We're shuffling things around, and every time I set a date and a time, he tells me, oh my gosh, something just came up. So either something's actually coming up or he's avoiding us. So we'll go with one of those. And Tedbo, who... T-Bone is actually at Baltimore Drupal Camp as we speak. I believe he's giving a training today. So that's why he is not here. So, David, one of my favorite parts of the show is where we ask you five almost completely random questions.
Okay.
And we force you to give us an answer just as quickly as you can. So, number one, name something interesting you do outside of Drupal.
Okay, so... Yes, I told you when we met in Barcelona, Mike, this week was my first time teaching at university. So I was really nervous because it was my first time, of course. And I hope none of my students are listening to this. But it was such a rewarding experience to feel, you know, you can engage them and facilitate critical discussion between the students. So I really love it. So, yeah, that was something interesting.
All right, very good. And then how about name the last piece of software you installed? And it can be something on your phone, your computer, your TV.
Okay, so Yeah, I was installing Kodi yesterday, which is a free software media center. I installed it in an Android device to connect it to the TV in our living room, so I could have access to, you know, movies and series and Spanish TV programs from London.
So what is it? How do you spell it?
Kodi. It's K-O-D-I. It's a free software media center.
All right, cool.
I think it used to have a different name, and they renamed it.
Yeah, how was it called? I don't remember the old name, yeah. It's XBMC.
XBMC, there you go.
Yeah, XBMC.
I couldn't remember it either.
Yeah. But now it's Kodi.
All right, cool. So what is a goal that you have not yet accomplished, but one that also terrifies you at the same time?
I think that's easy. Finishing my PhD and having a successful VIVA. So, you know, the VIVA is this process, you know, in which you have to defend your thesis with a set of experts, and they will go through the whole of your thesis very carefully. So you have to defend that your contribution to science is good enough to be considered a doctor. So it's a kind of scientific version of the code review process for polite application in your thesis. So I'm still very far from this, but I'm already very scared.
All right. No, that might be the best answer we've had for that question yet. All right. So this is, I think, Ryan's favorite question is, what is the last exotic animal that you hand fed?
Okay, so I think the most exotic one and the last I remember is feeding an elephant in India. I spent 3 months there studying some years ago with a scholarship, and I was once feeding an elephant. I think it was in Mysore, in Karnataka, in the south of India, close to Bangalore.
So what do you feed an elephant?
We're giving some peanuts, I think.
Oh, of course. I guess I should have guessed that, huh? All right, so last one. You're doing great. What was your tipping point Drupal moment? So in other words, a lot of people, they learn about Drupal and they get interested in Drupal, but for a lot of people, there's one moment or an event or a thing that happens where the light bulb comes on and you say, oh, now I get Drupal and now I really like what I'm seeing.
Okay. Yeah, I think my tipping point was when I started attending the local Drupal events in Madrid. So they used to be organized in Media Lab Prado, which is a kind of hub, a physical space for, you know, the commons, activists, researchers, hackers, an amazing place. So I started to get more and more interested about Drupal after meeting some of the people behind it and see how, you know, collaborative the environment was. And this was in the beginning of 2010, and then I would later start to attend camps, and then my first DrupalCon in Copenhagen in 2010, and then yeah, I realized how big and amazing all this is. So, and I ended up writing a PhD thesis in which Drupal communities make a study. So I think, yeah, this initial face-to-face meetup was really my tipping point, yeah, definitely.
All right, great answer. Well, David, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast today and talking about your research and contributions in the Drupal community. And I can't encourage everybody enough to go watch your community keynote from DrupalCon Barcelona. So thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much to you for inviting me. Thank you, everyone. I really enjoyed the conversation.
And Anna, of course, thanks for coming on and being our special guest co-host. Always.
Yeah, thanks for asking me to join the party.
Yeah, always fun to have you. And Ryan, always great to talk to you.
Excellent.
All right. So real quick, if you want to catch more episodes of the Drupal Easy podcast, you can just go to drupaleasy.com/podcast, or you can search for Drupal Easy in iTunes or your local, not your local, how about, well, it could be your local, your favorite pod catcher. If you want to talk to us or leave us a voicemail, you can always call, it's +1. Here in the U.S., 321-396-2340. If you want to get a heads up on what we might be talking about in future podcasts, you can follow the Drupal Easy podcast tag in Delicious. And for upcoming podcasts, we have a few. I have to actually look and see which ones are actually confirmed, other than I know that Mike Bell, the other half of the DrupalCon Barcelona community keynotes, will be joining us in 2 weeks on our next podcast to talk about mental health in the open source communities and open source communities. So thanks, everyone. And I'm going to play us out here with the full rendition of Impossible Dream from Adam Duran at DrupalCon Barcelona's pre-note. Here we go.
To dream the impossible dream, to write object-oriented code, to kill the unkillable abyss, persist though the progress had slowed, to patch the unpatchable file, to get a release candidate, to type when your hands are too weary, to reach the releasable age. This is our quest, to release Drupal 8. No matter how bloated, no matter how late, to document well, that's important, senor. And remember to go and thank trees, because views is in core. And I know if we'll all contribute at this glorious con, that our hearts will be joyful and glad when the crits are all gone, and the world will be better for this. That one team, sick and tired of the wait, still strove with the last ounce of caffeine to reach the releasable.